You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
On Brand is brought to you by my new book, Get Scrappy, Smarter Digital Marketing for Businesses Big and Small. Available now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or your favorite bookseller. Publishers Weekly calls Get Scrappy a helpful digital marketing Bible. You can read the first chapter, get special digital extras, and learn more now at GetScrappyBook.com.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? This week's guest is Paul Smith. Paul is a popular speaker and expert trainer on business storytelling techniques. A former Procter & Gamble executive, his clients include Hewlett-Packard, Bayer Medical, Progressive Insurance, Walmart, and other distinguished companies. As the author of Lead with a Story and Parenting with a Story, his work has been featured in The Wall Street Journal, Inc., Time, Forbes, The Washington Post, Success, and Investor's Business Daily. His latest book, which I'm holding in my hands right now, is Sell with a Story, How to Capture Attention, Build Trust, and Close the Sale. You can connect with Paul online at leadwithastory.com. Paul, welcome to On Brand.
Hey, Nick, thanks for having me on. It's good to be here.
It's interesting because, we were talking a bit before and obviously in going through the bio, I'm thinking about your work, which I want to talk about, but I am also thinking about you as a speaker and trainer. And I'm trying to think of other examples of someone that is, in their work, so consistently branded. It seems like though you've gone different places from leadership to parenting to sales, you have a pretty remarkable through line. So I guess kind of as a lead into all of it, how did you end up being the blank with a story guy?
Yeah. Yeah. I guess I do have a bit of a brand franchise there with the story. And I wish I could tell you that it was entirely intentional, but I mean, the first book was clearly very intentional. And it kind of led to the second one, and that kind of led to the third. And the way it happened was, after the first book, my publisher, and it was going well. And I think it's probably in its eighth printing now, and it's in six or seven languages around the world. And so it far exceeded my expectations, and I'm quite certain my publisher's expectations as well. And so they asked me, well, do you have any other ideas for a book? And the parenting book, I did have that idea. That wasn't the title I was going to put on it, but I did have an idea of a book full of short stories to teach, to help parents teach their kids wisdom and character and life lessons. And so I served that up to them, and they loved it. And one thing you learn in the authoring world is that you get to choose what's between the covers of the book, but you don't get much say-so in what's on the covers of the book. So the title of the book and the image that's on it and all that kind of stuff. And so they wanted to call it Parenting with a Story. And I just thought, well, gosh, I'm not even thinking about this as a parenting book. I was thinking about it as a life lessons book, which, yeah, you could – parents could use it with their kids, but that wasn't even my angle. But so really it was their idea to create something else with a story. And then by the time that book came out, then they started coming to me with ideas. And they said, we think the next book in the series ought to be Sell with a Story. So they literally came up with the title of the book first and said, go write a book that could be written under the title Sell with a Story. So that's kind of how it happened. Like I said, not very intentional on my part, but I think it's working out well.
So you're saying you're not like James Patterson with ideas and folders full of 30 other with a story books.
Well, I do now, but that wasn't my plan at the beginning. But yeah, I probably have 20 or 30 other ideas that may or may not ever see the light of day, but we'll see.
Well, so how did you start in, I would say, you know, probably either the lead with book or something in your work? What led you to story as this framing concept for teaching? Because we actually talk about story here a lot as a mechanism for building brands. But what is it about story that is such a powerful framework for leadership, parenting, and sales?
Yeah, well, there is something magical about stories, and human beings seem to be story creating and listening machines. You know, stories create relationships between people, and they I guess the most important thing is that it taps into that emotional center of the brain where most of our decisions are really made. I think a lot of the cognitive science that's been done in the last couple of decades has told us that human beings make subconscious, emotional, and sometimes irrational decisions in one place in our brain, and then we justify those decisions logically and rationally later in some other place in our brain. So we're left thinking that we've made these incredibly reasonable and rational, logical decisions, but the truth is we didn't. We made it more subconsciously and more emotionally, and all of the logic and facts and data that we can, you know, throw at people can only speak to that, you know, that one part of the brain, but it won't speak to the part where the decisions are really honestly getting made. And stories just seem to be emotion delivery vehicles, right? They're just better at that. So whether you're trying to lead an organization or parent your kids or sell something, you're trying to influence what people think and how they feel and what they do. And so stories just tend to be a much more effective vehicle to do all of those things.
I love the idea of stories as emotional delivery vehicles. I think that's there's some quote that someone mentioned from the screenwriting Dr. Robert McKee, talking about, you know, stories are, you know, how we make sense of the world around us. Because I think we have, you know, we are irrational beings in a very crazy world full of overstimulation. And I think that anywhere where you can use that, it is something that helps us all make sense of the world around us. So can you walk us through with that kind of thesis on this is story, kind of that emotional delivery vehicle? How does that emotional delivery vehicle deliver leadership?
Well, when you're trying to lead people, you know, that means things like setting a vision for the future or leading change or getting people to be more collaborative or getting them to be more creative and innovative or delivering feedback in a way that won't sting, you know, or teaching people how to do their jobs or defining the culture and the values of the organization or inspiring and motivating the team to achieve something incredible or getting them to hold themselves accountable to a goal. I mean, those are the kind of things that I think most of us would define as a leadership tasks, right? As opposed to management tasks, right? So I think storytelling is a leadership tool. It's not a management tool, right? You manage things and processes and decisions. You lead people. So anytime you're doing something that involves leading people, storytelling is going to be a great tool. And I just mentioned a few of the examples of those are the type of things that you might find yourself doing as a leader, where a great story can accomplish it probably better than just bossing people around, which has never really worked that well.
Well, yeah, and when you say it like that too, and some of the examples talking about vision and change for a future state, and you know, you could go through an exhaustive PowerPoint deck on what that might be like, with you know, full of bullet points on what we will do. But I think that, as you know, painting a picture of that story, telling a story of collaboration done right, helps people see it a little bit more. I mean, it's probably why the most unsexy version of stories alive in business that we all grab onto would be like case studies. I'm mm-hmm. seeing someone else do it. Here's how they went from point A to point B. I know that story. I know that it's possible.
Right. Yeah. And in fact, a case study is it's probably the closest thing, like you said, in business to a real story other than real stories themselves. And I think the primary difference between a case study and a story is that a case study, typically the main character is not a person. Yeah. It's a company. The company did this and the company did that and the brand did this and the brand did that. Okay. So, which is nice. I mean, it's better than, again, just telling people what to think and telling them what to do. But it's difficult for human beings to associate with and relate to a corporate entity. You know, it's easier to associate with human beings because we are human beings. And so when your main characters of your stories are, or of your narratives are people, it tends to be a real story. When the main characters of your narrative is a company or a brand or some abstract thing, that's generally when you have a case study.
That's a good point. And I think that that even kind of transcends to you know, some of the brand storytelling that we've talked about here, where people are trying to use story elements, but too often the actor in the story, yes, is the business, as opposed to, like what you said about contrasting leadership and management, that leadership's about people and leading people. And I think that stories done right are about people, whether it's your people internally or the people that you're serving externally, or right. probably at its most powerful, some combination of them both, what your people are doing for other people.
Right. In fact, a lot of what I think passes for story these days really isn't story at all. And it's case studies might be the closest. But, you know, people say things like, oh, yeah, our marketing plan is a story. Our brand equity tells a story. Our brand logo tells a story. And, well, no, it probably doesn't. Your brand equity probably is a brand equity, and your brand logo is probably a brand logo. You know, and brands have logos and brands have equities. And brands don't really have stories. People have stories. So the most powerful stories for you as a brand would be a story about a person using your brand, or a person interacting with your brand, or people, you know. So, and that's different than the kind of corporate stuff that most people put out and call a story. I think they'd be far better served by creating real stories about real people using their brand, where the brand could be the hero in the story, but it's a story about a person, not a story about the brand.
That's a really, really good point. And it reminds me that there is, as I'm sure you're probably aware, a lot of really bad or questionable work being done in business today under the banner of embracing stories.
Yes, amen. Yeah.
So as you segue from leadership, what about some of the life lessons that story can be a delivery system for?
Yeah, so it's, you know, if you were to sit down and make a list of the character traits that you want to have yourself, that you probably think you already have because most of us think that about ourselves, or that you want your kids or your grandkids or the next generation to have, that's essentially the contents, the table of contents of my second book, Parenting with a Story. So it's things like integrity and hard work and resourcefulness and grit and patience and fairness and kindness and creativity and curiosity and, you know, all, you know, those kind of things. In fact, there's a list of 23 of them, and I can never remember what they all are because it's 23 different things. But the idea is what I did was I interviewed 101 people around the world in all kinds of walks of life in 20 different countries around the world. And I was looking for what are their most poignant moments of clarity in life where they learned an important life lesson, usually the hard way, and that created for them a story worthy of passing along to the next generation. And I collected those 101 stories, and then I just ended up categorizing them into what character trait does this story teach a lesson on. And so there's 23, I think, different chapters, and so there are 4, 5, 6 stories for each one. And if you're trying to teach that character trait to yourself or a child, go to that chapter. There's going to be 4 or 5 stories, at least one of which is really going to resonate with you and help you with that character trait.
Love that. So that's a literal mapping of stories to desirable traits in life.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, you and I and everybody you know has got two or three really great life stories, unless they're 15 years old. They just don't have a lot of life experience yet, right? But by the time you're my age, you know, you've got two or three really impactful things that have happened to you in life. One or two of them are probably bad things that happened to you that, you know, where you regret and you made a big mistake and you learned from. And maybe one of them is something you did that was really smart and you're glad you did it and everybody should do it. But you don't have 100 of those type of stories. You know, you got two or three that are really powerful. And that, and I thought to myself, wouldn't it be cool if I could put in one book 101 really powerful stories like that? And so it took interviewing a lot of people, but you know what your stories like that are, and I know what mine are, but now you can know what 100 people's are.
Well, yeah. And having them mapped back to the lessons that you learned from them too. I mean, it sounds mm-hmm. like it's something that is, you know, certainly an interesting read, but also kind of probably a handy go-to resource. You know, you think about those life traits that you have or want, and it's rarely an easy box to check off the list. I have right. grit now.
Yes. Yeah. In fact, I kind of think of it as a as opposed to the kind of book that you'd sit down and read cover to cover like most books and like my other two books. It really is a resource, like you said, that, you know, when you find yourself struggling with your kid or yourself with, you know, whatever it might be, like integrity or patience or fairness or kindness or whatever, and turn to that chapter and go learn that and then put it down until you're ready to learn something else, as opposed to just read it, you know, story to story to story.
So fast forward to today, or probably a year and some change ago, mm-hmm. A publisher says, you're the With a Story guy, and your next one is Sell with a Story. I love the charge of, okay, that's what it's called. What right. does what does that mean? So how did you kind of circle that that assignment and then eventually attack it?
Yeah, well, so like all of like my other two books, it starts with doing a lot of research. So I kind of write in three phases, or do my research in three phases. First is I go and read all the other books that have been written on the topic, or as many as I can get done in 6 months. And so for each of the first two books, and for this one, it was literally 30 or 40 books on that topic already had been written in some form or fashion sometime in the last 100 years. And so I do that first, because I don't want to write something that's already been written before. I want to know where the empty space in the genre is. And then the second thing I do is I go interview over 100 people at least, one-on-one, you know, sit down, you know, for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, to really understand what that person knows about that topic. So with the first one, it was CEOs and executives at companies all over the world. You know, with the second one, it was just interesting people all over the world. For this third one, for Sell with a Story, I interviewed sales professionals and procurement professionals at over 50 different companies. So companies like Microsoft and Costco and Xerox and Abercrombie and Fitch and Hewlett Packard and Kroger and a bunch of others. And I interviewed both. I knew, of course, I needed to interview salespeople if it's going to be a book about sales. And I kind of late on in the research process decided to interview professional buyers as well. Mm. And I originally did that kind of as a lark. I thought, well, you know, that might be interesting. But by the end of the research, I was convinced that I learned more from the buyers than I did the sellers. And I probably should have thought about this earlier, but I mean, who better to tell me what sales stories work and which ones don't work than the professional buyers who do nothing all day long but listen to salespeople tell right. their stories, right, and decide what they're going to buy and what they're not going to buy. So that was a fascinating – just the research for that was just fascinating, listening to all of these salespeople and buyers tell me stories about their experiences with each other. And so kind of like the other two, I then categorized them into when are these stories being used? What kind of stories are being told? And what I ended up concluding was that salespeople are good ones, are telling stories throughout the entire sales process. Stories like I would call a story, not a sales pitch, but you know, everywhere from the moment they introduce themselves to the buyer, to building rapport, to making the sales pitch itself, to handling objections, to closing the sale, even managing kind of customer relationships after the sale, and ended up concluding there are 25 different stories that most salespeople really need to have in their repertoire of sales stories, you know, before they go out to be successful in the world. So it was just, it was a fascinating learning journey for me personally.
That sounds, I mean, one, as an author myself, I love the process and learning from it very kind of systematically there. I also love the idea of learning more from the buyers. I'm speaking as someone that works in the mm-hmm. branding and marketing side of things. I'm sitting over here thinking, why was that such a hard insight to get to? I mean, we talk about this thing in sales, both sales and marketing, that it's some sort of an effect that you're having on another party. Mm-hmm. And most of our books on this are only talking to one side, you know, as opposed to the intended target here. So that, I mean, that makes so much sense, and yet I can't think of anything I've read that's bothered to do that. And you've got these people absorbing all of these pitches, distilling them, and ultimately selecting one. So I don't know why more haven't done that.
Yeah, I think that's a good question, and I think the answer is that most people that write books on whether it's leadership or parenting or sales are themselves a recognized expert in leadership or parenting or sales. You know, so every other book that's been written, I suspect, on sales has been written by somebody who is a sales expert. Well, I'll admit I'm not a sales expert, or at least I wasn't before doing the research for this book. Now, I still wouldn't even call myself a sales expert. I'm a storytelling expert. But what I then do is I go apply that thing that I am an expert in to some area that's important to other people. And I go interview in depth and do a lot of reading and research and in that area of those people's expertise. And I get their advice and opinions and experiences and how they apply the thing that I'm an expert in to their world. So that's why I do it, because I recognize that I'm not, before going through this research, necessarily an expert in any of those things. And most people are when they write these books. So they sit down and they write a book about, well, here's what I know about this. Okay, well, that's nice. But I'd rather get opinions from more than just my own personal life experiences.
So you talked about 25 different stories that salespeople should have. Are there two or three of those that you could preview as examples?
Yeah. So one of my favorite is, as I call it, a value-adding story. And so this is a story to actually make the product or service you're selling more valuable. And one of them actually happened to me personally. My wife and I last summer, actually it was May of last year, we were at Coney Island in Cincinnati at an art fair. And my wife was looking for a piece of art for our son's bathroom at home. And she gets to this one booth of this guy named Chris Goog. And he's one of these underwater photographers and just takes these breathtaking pictures of sea anemones and coral reefs and stuff like that. And it's just mesmerizing stuff. Well, she's flipping through his wares and she gets attached to this picture that to me looked about as out of place as a pig in the ocean. And since you've read the book, you know that the reason is because it was literally a picture of a pig in the ocean, right? I mean, it was crazy. And when I finally got a chance to ask the guy, I said, dude, what's with the pig? How'd you get this pig to swim in the ocean to get this picture? And he said, oh yeah, it was the craziest thing. He said, that picture was taken off the coast of this uninhabited island in the Bahamas called Big Major K. And he said, apparently what happened was a few years ago, some local entrepreneur decided to raise a pig farm for bacon. And so he buys this drove of pigs and he puts them out on this uninhabited island because it'd be free for him to, you know, keep them out there. And he said, but look in the picture, look up there on the beach behind the pig. And what do you see up there growing on the behind the beach? And I looked and I said, well, all I recognize back there are cactus. And he said, yeah. That's a problem, right? Pigs don't like cactus. So he said, so they weren't eating, you know, so they weren't thriving. And he said, well, fortunately for the pigs, there was a local restaurant owner on a neighboring island started boating his kitchen refuse every night over to Big Major K and dumping it a few dozen yards offshore. And so pretty soon these hungry little pigs smell this food and they get brave enough to dog paddle their way out or pig paddle, I guess, their way out to get this food, right? And first it's one pig, then it's two, and you know, three generations later, you know, all the pigs on this island can swim. And in fact, now everybody just calls it Pig Island. And he said, in fact, that made it so easy for me to take the picture, because normally I've got to get my scuba equipment on and it's this big, you know, ordeal. And but, you know, these pigs, once they see a boat coming, they've been trained that that means food. And so they swim right up to your boat. And he said, I just had to lean over the edge of the boat and stick my camera in the water. That's like easiest picture I ever took. And so, of course, at that point, I got my credit card out and I'm like, we'll take it. Right. Sold. Completely sold right now. And think about that. I mean, that was the magic, because 2 minutes ago, that picture was worth nothing to me.
Yeah.
Right. But after hearing the story, now I had to have it. And the reason was because I wasn't just buying a picture anymore. I was buying a story, you know, a story that I like to tell. I tell it to everybody who comes in my house and I get to tell you about it. And more importantly, it's a combination of a history lesson, a geography lesson, an animal psychology lesson, all kind of rolled into one. And so it's so much more valuable now. So that's a value adding story.
That's great. I mean, I can't think of anything more kind of representative of how one sells with a story. If it sounds, if people are having trouble connecting the dots, I think that, you know, you can definitely see where it fits in the sales process.
Right.
Is there one more kind of story structure example?
Yeah. So kind of the quintessential story that you might tell during the actual sales pitch is I call a problem story. So it's the story that explains the problem that your product or service is designed to solve. So one of the examples I use in the book is from a guy named Kevin Moulton, who sells internet security protocol software, which is the stuff that keeps transactions over the internet safe and stuff like that. And what he does, he calls on banks. So he's a salesperson. He goes into a bank and he's trying to convince them to use his software. And what he typically ends up doing is just telling them about a trip he made to Las Vegas. He said, you know, a few years ago, I was in Vegas at one of these, you know, sales conferences. And you know how these things are. You go to the conference during the day, you go have dinner, you know, and then you're in Vegas. So you're going to go and enjoy the nightlife. And he said, so I was going to the casinos and I won some, I lost some, I won some, I lost some, I lost some more, I lost some more. You know, he said, it's 1 o'clock in the morning and I was totally out of cash. And so I go to the machine and type in my number and it said transaction denied. And I type the number in again and it said transaction denied. I try a different machine, transaction denied. I'm like, okay, I know what's going on. I live in New Jersey. All of a sudden I'm in Las Vegas. It's the middle of the night. I'm trying to get a boatload of cash out of a machine. They think that somebody stole my credit card. That's fine. I like it that my bank is looking out for me and trying to keep me safe. But what bothered me is what they did about it. They called my wife, okay, at 4 o'clock in the morning back in New Jersey. All right. And can you imagine what that side of the conversation sounded like? Ah, well, sorry to wake you up, Mrs. Moulton, but it's 1 o'clock in the morning in Las Vegas and your husband is trying to get a boatload of cash out of a machine at a casino. Do you approve this transaction? You know? And he was like, she was livid. I was livid. We didn't speak for a week. I called my bank to complain. They were just like, well, that's our protocol. And he's like, look, you've got my cell phone number. Why didn't you call me? Well, it's our policy to whatever. And, you know, so he tells them that story so that they can see that, look, you probably have a problem like this, right? That where whatever your current security protocols are not only keeping your customers from doing legitimate business with you, but you're creating a problem in their lives. That may not be this exact problem, but I wanted you to see this is the kind of thing that can happen when you don't have the right kind of sophisticated security protocols. Now, you know, my company, this would never happen if you had, you know, our software. And he explains two or three ways that they do it in a more sophisticated manner and or as simple as call their cell phone. You know, so a story like that can make it so much more clear and emotionally resonant with a buyer than just saying, well, you know, 32% of consumers report having difficulty when trying to get cash out of a machine, you know, or whatever. That's like blah, 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 blah. Yes, feature benefit, feature benefit, feature benefit. But the story just really makes it come alive.
Well, and that's, you know, when you said problem story, I thought, okay, so here's the standard, like you said, feature benefit driven, this is the problem we solve for our customers. Instead of, you know, kind of another, I mean, so many different interesting ways to tell stories, which was why I think it's a, like you said, a great delivery vehicle. But to paint that picture of the situation gone awry, right. I think does it so much more powerfully.
Yeah, and that's a real story about a real person, something that really happened. And it doesn't have to be about you. I mean, I just told you that story, and my name's not Kevin Moulton, right? So, I mean, you can get away with telling other people's stories as long as you give them credit for it. But as opposed to it being a corporate, sterile story about a brand, again, a real story about real people and something that happened to them is always going to be more powerful.
Right, right. So those two stories and 23 others can be found in Sell with a Story, the new book from Paul Smith. Paul, as we start to wrap up, we always ask people, seems apropos, and as I think of it now, I naturally conclude with making my guests tell another story. So story again at work in the world around us, that is a story of a brand that has made you smile recently.
Yeah, so for me, that would have to be Backroads, which you may have never heard of, but it's an active travel company. And so what they do is they're essentially a combination of travel planner and Sherpa guide, right? They not only plan your vacation for you, but they go with you on vacation. Oh. And they outdoor active type vacation. So, you know, you might be in Alaska in the summer and you'll be bike riding today, and tomorrow you'll be kayaking, and the next day you'll be mountain climbing, and then you're going to be, you know, doing something else. And they go with you, and they make it so easy, and they rack the bikes on top of the van for you, and they meet you at the top of the mountain with the lunch pail and the hot coffee and the, you know, so it makes it so easy to go have a wonderful active outdoor vacation with your family. And almost all of our vacations, our family vacations for the last few years have been with them. And so every time I think of them, I smile because I'm thinking about a wonderful time that I had with my family, and the next time that I'm certain to have a great time with my family is going to be with them as well.
That is awesome. And I again, someone that I had heard of, but now know a little bit more about. So if we want to point folks for the best place to learn about everything that you do online, where should we send them?
Yeah, thank you. So my website is leadwithastory.com. And yeah, you can find all the books there and the coaching and training that I do. And I do my own podcast and blogs. And so if people want to learn more about stories, there's definitely a lot of ways to get that done there.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes. Paul, thanks for joining us on Brand.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.
And before we go, I always like to flip the microphone around to our community. Recently, Bhupinder Nayar over in India gave us a shout out for our episode featuring Aaron Orendorf. Thanks for listening, Bhupinder. And a reminder, if you like something on this episode or another, or if you have a question you'd like one of our guests to answer, let me know on Twitter using the hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may just hear your thoughts right here on the show. You can find links to everything that we talked about at branddrivendigital.com. You can subscribe to the show via iTunes, Stitcher, and RSS. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, give us a quick rating and review, help others find the show. And remember, On Brand is brought to you by my new book, Get Scrappy, Smarter Digital Marketing for Businesses Big and Small. Order now at Amazon and check out GetScrappyBook.com for special offers and extras. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to OnBrandPodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.